Yes, we are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. John Wall doesn't need no introduction. It's an insider's look at the NBA and culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick of the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There's a new way to bet on things outside of sports with Kalshi. Maybe you thought on the future of TikTok. Will Congress ban it? Or won't they? Will Taylor Swift's album win Album of the Year? Will Biden's approval rating go up? Will it go down? Or inflation? You can trade futures on all of that and make money if you're correct. You're smart. You know things. Bet on it. $20 bonus if you go to Kalshi.com/stereo. Spelled K-A-L-S-H-I and deposit $50. Kalshi.com/stereo. Get in the game. There is no guarantee of performance. An investor could lose their entire investment. Investment fees. iHeartMedia does not recommend any investments. See further disclosures at Kalshi.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, let me tell you something. Okay, here's something to chew on. Many recent studies suggest that having good oral health impacts your overall health. Yet most of us don't brush our teeth properly, and you could start doing it today, okay? You could start brushing your teeth better today. Introducing Quip, aka the Tesla of toothbrushes. They're the new company that's refreshing the way people brush their teeth. Okay, you know how much I hate bad breath. Okay, I can't stand it. 75% of us don't use our bristles or visit the dentist on time. That's why you need Quip. Quip is an electric toothbrush that packs premium vibration and a timer feature into an ultra-slim design that's half the cost of bulkier toothbrushes. It's basically as if Apple created a toothbrush, okay? Does that make sense? It's like the Apple of toothbrushes, but without the big price tag. You have to see it and brush with it to believe it yourself. Right now, go to getquip.com/Rappaport. That's getquip.com, Q-U-I-P. You can even subscribe to receive new brush heads on a dentist-recommended 3-month plan for just $5. Keep your teeth clean, keep your breath fresh for just $5, including free shipping. Quip is backed by leading dentists and was named by Time Magazine as one of the best inventions of 2016. Okay, Time Magazine doesn't play games. They won the 2016 GQ Magazine Grooming Award. Okay, and made it on Oprah's 2017 New Year's O list. This is real. You want to have a good time, you got to have good teeth. Again, go to getquip.com/IamRappaport to get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. I have a Quip electric toothbrush. It's changed my life. My breath is like a beautiful Sunday morning. Go to getquip.com/IamRappaport. Right now, go to getquip.com/IamRappaport to get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. getquip.com/IamRappaport. All right, here we go. I'm here with G Moody, last name rhymes with duty. And if you never listened to the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast, this is the only podcast that prides itself on no fact checking.
Yes.
Okay. We're not fact checking. All right. We go rough, rugged, and raw. They call us the Disco 2, the Malachi Brothers. My name is Michael Rappaport, a.k.a. the Gringo Mandingo, a.k.a. Mr. White Folks, a.k.a. Michael Rappacrap. I'm here with G Moody, last name rhymes with duty.
Yes, that's true.
The 2015-2016 podcast co-host of the year. I told you we have a jam-packed, star-studded show. We got Bruce Banner himself, the Incredible Hulk, Mark Ruffalo, coming up on the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast. Currently in the movie Thor, number one movie in the world, not in the country. He's been in all sorts of things. Now You See Me, The Kids Are All Right, Reservation Road, Zodiac, Shutter Island.
Everything.
Great actor. Foxcatcher, three-time Oscar-nominated actor, three times.
Hey, I got to ask you, what makes this guy above the rest? What makes him a great actor?
That's a good question. He's skilled. He's like the kind of actor, you know, like if I was equating it to like an NBA point guard, I'd say he's like a Mike Conley. Like, nothing fancy, no tricks, a great, just skilled actor. Time and time and time again, like a John Stockton, consistent, over and over and over and over and over again. The ladies love him. The ladies love him. He's a married man, but the ladies love him. He's got a swag about him, like, you know, he's just got it. He's good. And you know, he could do drama, he could do comedy, and he's likable, and he's just skilled. You know, he has a real likable quality about him, and he's intense. Like, he was in this movie, he was nominated for an Oscar, Foxcatcher, with Steve mm-hmm. Carell and Channing Tatum, about those wrestlers. The United States Olympic wrestlers. It's a crazy story. And he's just good, man. He's intense. He could be sort of creepy when he wants to, but he's just good, man. He's just a dope actor. Three-time Oscar-nominated actor. Three times. He's no joke. He's worked with everybody. I got to talk to him about all that. He worked with Scorsese. He worked with David Fincher. He's in these crazy, big, ridiculously big-budgeted, worldwide successful movies. He's got a dope career, and he's a dope actor. So I'm a fan of his, and I'm looking forward to talking to him on the podcast.
Yeah, I want to hear this. Yeah, for sure.
Before we get to Ruffalo, Mark Ruff, how you feeling, Mr. Moody?
Oh, I feel good, man. Everything is good. My house is looking good.
Yeah.
Everything is, the Bronx Gloom Tomb is about to be up and running. Just one more hurdle, and then that's it.
Now, people, when we first started out, we put out, before the fire and all the insurance stuff, we said we were going to have a dinner at the Bronx Gloom Tomb, correct?
Yes.
And you were going to make...
Oxtails,
an sweet oxtail tea. Dinner,
yeah, sweet tea, and all the good stuff.
Listen, we want to make good on that. The yes. people that hit us up and donated to get that good oxtail dinner, the time is now with Moody.
Yeah.
Okay. Hit us up on Twitter. You know where to find us. These are our loyalists. These are the I Am Rappaport core fans. The oxtail dinner from G Monetti. Although it might not be the healthiest thing, okay? Although it might not be in your diet, it's well worth the long over 2 year yeah. wait, okay?
Yeah. It's coming. We had a devastating fire that kind of put things on pause.
But that threw everything out of the loop.
Yeah, I'm in the gloom tomb right now, And it's looking good, and I'm very happy.
So, Monetti, something broke the other day regarding it's like never ending. We've talked about Lena Dunham on this show before. I've acknowledged that I like the show, Girls. I also acknowledge that she had a show called Girls on for, I think it was 5 or 6 seasons on HBO that took place in Brooklyn that didn't have any black and or Latino girls on it. It should have been called White Girls.
Yeah.
That being said, the trials and tribulations of Lena Dunham. Apparently, now I never heard of this term, her and her writing staff have been accused of hipster racism. Not just straight up racism. Hipster racism.
And what is that? That's just like casual racism. Just and then like they said in the paper, it's like, oh, it's just a joke. Don't get out of hand. It's just a joke. That's that bullshit.
Yeah, well, what does that mean, hipster racism?
I never
heard this. See, that's the thing. Did somebody come up? The woman who accused Lena. Why you put the hipster in front of it?
Because it's a way they do it. She said she kind of explained it. It's the way it's said, and then they come off as like, well, we're just being provocative. Yo, we already pulled this girl's file. We already pulled it, and it came out, and we see what time it is with her. It's a bunch of bullshit. Soapbox. I called her the soapbox liar.
Yeah. She's wacky, man. She's wacky. I mean, the accusations that are coming out left, right, and center from everybody from Russell Simmons, Brett Ratner over the weekend, more people came out against them, to Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose is apparently wild for the night.
So he's walking around CBS studios, or PBS, when he was working at PBS. He's walking around naked, the newsman for over 40 years. he's walking, handing memos to people naked. Get the fuck out of here.
Do you think this is real?
The press is all in on this shit, because how are you going to print something like that without any evidence? And then this guy gets suspended. That's not journalism. That's like witch hunt shit. That's not journalism. This motherfucker is 70 something years old. You think he's walking around CBS naked? Get the fuck out of here, man.
Let me just tell you, to anybody who's listening to the show, I 500% don't support sexual assault, sexual harassment.
Hell, no one does.
Not in any way, shape, or form. But I also 500% don't accept false allegations or unproven allegations of the same thing.
Yeah.
And you could feel the same way about both of those things. You could be like, I don't accept, condone, support sexual harassment, sexual assault. And you could also feel the same way. I don't accept and condone false accusations of sexual assault and harassment. It's okay to feel the same way about both things, because, you know, I saw this. I mean, this happens all the time. All the time. And there's people that have died in prison, white men and black men, false accusations, unproven.
Yeah.
Rapes. Sexual assault, forget murders and all that stuff. And I'm not saying whether Charlie Rose is guilty or not guilty. I have no idea. This just came out. This actor, Jeffrey Tambor, who if you don't know his name, you know his face. He's been around for 40 years, at least.
Yeah. Yes.
He's currently on the show Transparent. He was accused of, I don't even know if it was sexual harassment or just harassment.
Can't even say shit. Yeah.
He was over his sexual harassment accusations. And then Jeffrey Tambor came out and he said, I vehemently deny these claims. And people on Twitter and social media, because we're in such a frenzy, and in some ways rightfully so, because a lot of people are straight up guilty for these things they've done. Putting your hands on a woman, exposing yourself, all that wild shit. But if a man says, I vehemently deny these things, and you have no proof, you can't just say, oh, it's true just because it's true.
Yeah, because someone said it. Yo.
I came out and said this, and I said the exact thing I just said on Twitter, and then it turned into some other thing, because it said like in the Daily News that I was blasted after defending Jeffrey Tambor over sexual harassment. And first of all, I wasn't blasted, because I stand by every single thing I say. A couple of people tweeted back. This is in the news, in the New York Daily News. Somebody said it wasn't just one person, it was two. Oh, no. And I said, how the fuck do you know? And then another person said, I'm disappointed in your stance. Sexual assault is not new. We're in a new age now where people, whatever the case is like, yo, you can't. And if he says he vehemently denies it, then we need to go to a court of law and figure this shit out. Now, Jeffrey Tambor has left the show Transparent. And he said his set, the set that he works on, has become highly politicized.
Yo, innocent until proven guilty. This man isn't guilty, but that's what I'm talking about, this journalism. And then it's just out there, and like it's true. Where's the evidence? This woman pops up and says, him, points at him. Where's the evidence?
And I don't see how society could believe this person. They never even seen a picture, never made eye contact. You can be a fucking asshole. You could be mean. You could be rude. You could be disrespectful and still not have sexually harassed somebody. You could be the biggest fucking piece of shit, mean motherfucker to work with, and still not have sexually harassed anybody. And if you did, then you need to pay the price.
Right.
But you just being a fucking prick doesn't mean you sexually harass somebody. And that was my point.
Yeah, that was my point. I don't know how could they blast you.
Say it again?
I don't know how you could get any flack. I read what you wrote on Twitter. Yo, you're saying I support, you know, I don't support fucking women getting harassed, anything sexually harassed, physically, none of that. No one supports that. But in our country, yo, it's innocent until proven guilty. I just don't believe you because you said it.
And you know what's weird? Why isn't any of this going on in France, Italy, Spain, Israel, everywhere? Barcelona, Brazil.
All of a sudden, a wave of guys. Yo, you better watch out, man. Shit, motherfuckers gonna come at you.
Trust me. I've thought about the 90s, and that ain't my thing. I grew up in New York City, man. You put your hand on a girl when you're not supposed to. You get your shit smacked out of you. That's how I look at it.
Right.
This little New York Times, this little Daily News writer tried to say I was blasted. Kate Feldman. Blasted. You don't know what blasted is.
Yeah, Kate. Hold your head.
Yo, Kate, hold your head unless you want to get that. Do I need to give it a Willie Hutch, or should that be a warning
not
shot?
Yet. Not yet.
You sure? Yo, let me get that Willie, man. Yo, Kate Feldman, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, crazy lady. You trying to stir the pot on me? Listen to me. You hear that, Willie? You got the wrong dude here.
Yeah.
Because I stand by everything I says.
Right.
That's right. I said stand by everything I says, not said.
That's right.
Okay? I don't know who you is. Maybe you mad because I have a soon-to-be best-selling book. This book has balls, sports rants from the MVP of Talking Trash, and you're at the New York Daily News writing wannabe, would-be smut pieces on me, the Gringo Man Dingo?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is you bugging?
Yeah.
You're at the New York Daily News writing 150-word little bullshit smear pieces for $75. You trying to come at me, the Gringo Man Dingo? Right. Hold your head, Kate Feldman.
Yeah. Write on somebody else. Leave my man alone before you get your ass tore up.
You don't want it. cake. You do not want it from me. Word. Trust me, I don't play.
Yeah, we old school New Yorkers, man.
I'll run your whole file. Hold your head, Kate Feldman. This is just a little Willie Hutch warning. All right, let's get to it.
Okay.
We got real stars in here tonight. Mark Ruffalo. The Mark Ruffalo. Bruce Banner himself. Dr. Bruce Banner, right?
Yeah, Dr. Bruce Banner. Yes.
The good Dr. Bruce Banner is with us on the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast. Let's go. Believe it or not, the holidays is just around the corner. Okay, it's coming up. And while that means plenty of parties, gifts, and spending, it also means there's so many football games, basketball games, and hockey games you could score big with every single day. Go to mybookie.ag. I love this site. Man up and play like the pros on game day. You can play the money line, side, or total. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs and offers super fast payouts when you win. Listen, where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And if you want to make money betting the games, you gotta go to mybookie.ag. They're the only site that I would recommend. I trust them. You don't have to take my word for it. Okay, go check them out for yourself. They have odds on every matchup and a mobile site that makes wagering on your smartphone a breeze. It's so simple. Visit mybookie.ag today. Join now. And MyBookie will match your deposit with up to 50% of a bonus, okay? Use the promo code Rappaport, R-A-P-A-P-O-R-T, to activate your offer. You play, you win, you get paid. Go to MyBookie.ag. Now use the promo code Rappaport. All right, Mark Ruffalo.
Michael
Rappaport.
Hey, buddy.
How's everything, man? Where are you?
I'm in New York City.
Oh, really? I thought you were. Are you working on something now?
Yeah, I've been working on Avengers 3 and 4, shooting that in Atlanta, but I got a few days off, so I boogied down here to see my little family.
So, shit, man. So you're shooting both of those movies at the same time?
Well, basically, yeah. I mean, we're kind of focused on Avengers 4 now, or Infinity War 2. We've been jumping back and forth between the movies as they needed stuff. But right now we're in the final stretches of finishing out Avengers 4.
And how long have you been working on these movies? Cause I've never been in a comic book movie. I don't know if I'm ever going to be one. I would love to be in one, but like
they'd be foolish not to have you.
Come
man.
Come on, Mark, hook me up, man.
Seriously,
let's go, man.
But so, you fit that world perfectly.
Come
I'm
on,
surprised.
Man. I can put on a costume.
Buddy, if
I'll talk
I'm there,
some shit.
You should be there. That's for damn sure.
Let's do something, man. But how long does it take to make these movies?
So generally, principal photography is between 4 and 6 months for each one. It's forever. And
how many of you have you done so far?
This will be my, let's see, I did one, two, three, five now. This will be five
shit.
I'm finishing. Yeah, man. It's like shooting a TV show where you only shoot one episode every 3 years.
And so you're in the process right now of shooting 3 and 4. So when you're shooting these movies, like the schedule, like... Is it one day you could be shooting 3? Is it one day you could be shooting 4? And then the same day you could be shooting both? And are both the scripts finished? And how much do the scripts fluctuate while you're shooting them?
So depending on the movie, like we did Thor Ragnarok, and we were improvising a ton on that movie. When we did Avengers 1 and 2, we weren't really allowed to improvise at all. Avengers 3 and 4, we don't really improvise. Sometimes we'll throw in a joke here or there on the run. But for the most part, you know, we're shooting what they're writing. But granted, we are getting rewrites, you know, the same day we're shooting a script. Oftentimes that happens. And we're constantly changing it. We'll even reshoot a scene that we shot a week or two previous to accommodate for script changes. But just to give you an example, I was doing reshoots on Thor in 1 week. I did reshoots on Thor 3 while shooting Avengers 3 and shooting Avengers 4.
Damn, man.
But I'm telling you, and they're super, super secretive. So you don't even get the full script. You'll get like the first 20.
They don't give the Hulk the script?
They don't even give the Hulk the script. They'll give me like, they'll let me read a draft of it or almost finished draft. So like on
But
on
do you have to read with like the armed guards around you?
Kind of. Like the guy sits there outside your door and they read it. And then you gotta sign it and then give it back to them. And the thing's got your name plastered all over it. And they don't give you the whole script. So they'll give you like, you'll see two or three pages that'll have giant blocks of text that are just blacked out. It looks like, you know, some CIA WikiLeaks drop or something, you know? So man, your head is like twisted. It's a way of working that I don't know if I'll ever get used to. You never really know where you're ending or where you're heading. And so, man, it has its own challenge, but it's it's an amazing group of people, and we've been doing it for so long now. We know each other really well, and so, man, I just feel really blessed to have this work at this moment in time. You know,
no, I'm sure, because people that just know you from these movies, which I mean, people have to know, like, you've done other stuff. You came from smaller films and to be doing these movies, it's so far-fetched, and like when we were younger, I think we're close to the same age, these movies weren't even a thing,
these were like joke movies, like, right. When these came out, they were the movies, yeah, sure, you went to see them, but you didn't expect much from them,
And so when you're working on CGI, like, I've done light CGI, but I've never actually done a CGI film where I'm literally like not where it looks like. So are you sometimes literally acting by yourself in a green room and you're supposed to be like on top of a building or killing somebody or like eating airplanes or shit like that?
Yeah. So a lot of the times when I'm doing fight scenes, those are either by myself or they're with a stuntman, playing one of the characters I'm fighting. It used to be, when I first started doing this, like, the technology's made this huge jump now. I mean, but when I first started doing it, you had to do all of your face acting sitting in a chair. You had to do all your acting in two pieces. You did your body acting, and they would capture your body movements. And you'd be acting, doing your lines or whatever by myself, looking at a tennis ball or whatever. Then I'd have to go sit in a chair where they basically clamp your head down so you can't move your head when you're acting. I mean, I'm Italian, man. I move everything when I'm acting.
And are you thinking while they have you clamped down, I went to Stella Adler, you motherfuckers. Like, I'm a trained fucking actor. I spent my own hard-earned money on acting class, and this is what the fuck it's come to?
Yes, I've had those moments. I'm like, what am I? I'm not a lab rat. I'm a man. I'm a trained actor, But I'll tell you, the good thing about what that training was for me is, like, a lot of that was imagination. You've done theater, so you don't have the buildings there when you're looking out. You don't have the window there. You don't have a park there in front of you, So you really learn how to use your imagination. And oddly enough, that old traditional form of acting works really well for the new stuff. Mm-hmm. I see people struggling much more with it than like the old, people who've had to really develop that muscle, which is your imagination, putting things there that aren't really there. Some people call that crazy. Mm-hmm. Other people, like you and me, just call that good acting,
Explain to me, or explain to the listeners, because I've asked actors this, because I'm not like a classically trained, not even classically trained. Like, I didn't go to like that many acting, classes. I went to like one. And I know rumor has it you were in the same acting class at some point with Benicio, who's a friend of mine. And I always break his balls about his fucking theater and his method acting shit. But explain in basic terms the best you can, because at this point, I think everybody, all actors have their own quote unquote method, and obviously Daniel Day-Lewis has, these extreme tactics and, what he does, and everybody's all fascinated with that. But can you explain in basic terms what method acting is?
Well, okay, so that's it's kind of tough because in the 50s, Method broke off into two different schools. One was Lee Strasberg and one was Stella Adler. They were the two biggest acting teachers basically in the world at that time. And they were like the masters. They were like Vince Lombardo or something. They were the best coaches in the world, doing mm-hmm. the most progressive, badass shit that was changed acting forever. And one decided that the best way to work was just to use all your own personal experiences. Your dog got hit by a car. And I'm giving you the real, like the Cliff Notes version of this.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, the Cliff Notes, like the basic dog got hit by a car, when you're strapped down and the Hulk might need to cry, the old dog got hit by a car trick might be the thing that works, and like the simplest straight up the alley. Like my fucking dog got hit by a car, my hamster died in the third grade.
Yes. That's why I think this split is bullshit. Basically, what it was saying, what the method says, is that it's you there. That if you try to pretend it's not you, then you're telling a lie. Mm-hmm. And so you wanna either A, bring as much of your own personal experience into your work so that you understand what your character is going through. Like, everyone's fallen in love, all right? So everyone could play Romeo and Juliet, supposedly, because mm-hmm. you understand the nature of what it is to be in love, or you understand the nature of what it is to want to kill, you know, have revenge. We have all these basic human things that we all share. That's why we all can watch the same movie and all like it, right? Mm-hmm. And so the school was saying, we have to bring our authenticity. We have to make this shit real. And how we make it real is by understanding it in our own lives. Mm-hmm. And that was a radical concept at that time. Mm-hmm. And so that's what became Method. So some people take that to the extreme. Like, if they're playing Dracula, they sleep in a coffin at home, you know? They got to be called Dracula everywhere they go. Now, I personally think that's a little bit tiring, you know? It's not my thing. The other one was just to be like, use your imagination and understand these things inside yourself, but then use your imagination to lift yourself up into the material.
Right.
And that's what Stella was talking about. And that's that was the next step of the method. And it didn't put so much weight on the things that had happened to you in your life, but more importance on the things that happen to the character and relating those things to you in your life.
Got you. I've never worked with it. People ask this all the time. I've never worked with somebody that was openly hardcore method. Now, I've been around some actors that I think they actually thought they were the character, but when they never actually openly admitted it. Have you ever have you ever worked with somebody that was like, please call me by the character's name?
No, not really. Nope, I haven't.
Have you ever gotten so focused on the Hulk where you're like, no, motherfucker, don't call me Mark. I'm not Mr. Ruffball. You call me fucking Hulk. Like, have you ever gotten like, we're like, yo, the scene is so hard. You've been doing the shooting for 3 months. I'm fucking Hulk. Like, have you ever told a PA or a director or a producer, like, I'm not fucking Ruffalo today. Call me by my fucking character's name.
Never, man. I think I'd be embarrassed to do that. But I will tell you this. I have had moments where I did literally turn into the Hulk when someone's doing some crazy shit, like a relight or something in the middle of a scene, and you're there and they're like moving the camera around, or, you know, just generally not being very respectful to the moment. And
right.
I have had a little Hulk burst where they did want to call me the Hulk, uh-huh. I think.
Now,
but that's few and far between.
Now,
I mean,
I'm sure you're chill, but I'm sure it's tedious. And listen, you know, we're not digging ditches and, you know, acting.
No,
is,
buddy, come
we're
on.
Lucky. And, you know, so I know you're not complaining. All right. Do kids trip out now that you've been in so many of these movies? Like, when young kids and teenagers, forget the adults, but like the kids bug out when they see you in real life? Because it's one thing to be recognized by kids, but it's another thing to be recognized for like these films. I mean, there must be pros and cons to that.
Buddy, it's a whole nother thing. I mean, I'm walking down the streets of New York and I'm like, Bruce Banner! The Hulk! And it's kids, and they love the character. And I swear to God, it's as if I never did any other movie in my life sometimes. That's all they know. That's all they know me for, especially the kids, which is cool, you know?
I'm sure it's cool. All right, so I want to get into your film. So like I said, you have done so many dope films, and now you're doing these bigger films. As a fan and as a participant, what do you think the state of the movie business is in terms of just... Because for me, the biggest concern that I have is that it's not spread around. You know, I don't go to the movies as much as I used to. You know, there's like big movies, and then there's like tiny movies. Like, what is your feeling about it? Just as a, because you started as a fan. Before you started being a participant and working, we're all fans. So where's your head at with it?
You know, I mean, it's a whole different world. And that's just basically since you and I have been acting, we went from film to digital. And we went from, you know, one way of watching, you know, you either had TV or you had movies. And now we have this whole other way that people are ingesting entertainment, which is their phones and their tablets and their laptops, and then they're streaming shit in from the internet. So it's like the whole thing is totally changed. And in some ways I think that's given a lot more people access to it. There's a lot more content that's needed. Television it right now is in its kind of golden era. All the, you know, I keep thinking, you know, I keep seeing like all the great, really great, interesting stuff right now, I think is happening in television. You know, when we were younger, you stayed away from, there was two kinds of actors. There's movie actors and television actors, and neither the two would meet. Now it's all mashed together. We're losing things, and at the same time, we're gaining things. You know, that's true. That middle-sized movie about families, about, you know, just personal stories that aren't so big concept and hero-driven things are, I feel like, right now, you know, languishing. They're having a hard time. That said, a lot of that pathos, a lot of those stories have moved, and really interesting, complex characters have moved into the television form now.
I mean, even like the film, you know, like Foxcatcher, which was, I didn't have your number. That movie was fucking great. The documentary afterwards, because I had seen, there was a couple of documentaries before, but then I saw the film and then I saw another documentary afterwards. And I was even more impressed with all three of you guys. The whole thing was just, it was dark, it was creepy, it was spooky. And I imagine a film like that, everything's got to be lined up with, you know, you got to get this person, you got to get that person to get the film made just from a financial standpoint.
Yeah. So that was a really brave move from Annapurna, who produced it, you know, who's new to the game, who said, I want to make these difficult movies with directors that are doing interesting things that have their own voice. So you had Bennett, who had already done,
Moneyball,
Capote.
Right?
And he did Moneyball, which your people will appreciate. And so he was in that sports world. And and then you had Channing Tatum, who was hot, and who basically we hung the movie on. And then you get Steve Carell, and so then you got all the makings of being able to finance a $20 million movie about wrestlers that's dark and creepy and scary. That kind of movie is probably a little bit more difficult to make, but that's also the kind of movie that a lot of actors and directors want to be making, you know?
What was he like, Steve Carell? Because he seems like, I'm not saying he wanted you to call him the character, but he seems like he slips in the character and he's like in the character.
Well, yes. The one person that I did work with who seemed to stay in character all the time was Steve, and I totally kind of forgot about that. But I would see, first of all, he was so weird that literally I'd run away from him when I'd see him on set because he just freaked me out.
And he had a fucking nose, and I think he had teeth, right?
Yeah, he had the nose and the teeth and that kind of weird, awkward, you know, he stayed in character. So it was very weird and awkward every time we ran into each other. And that's kind of, I think, the relationship that Dave had with, right. you know, the character I was right. playing had with him. So, you know, we were both sort of playing into that. One day I was in the, I was at the hotel. We had a hard day's work. It was a long day. It was fucking brutally cold. And I rolled in the elevator, and that was a really hard movie to work on, man. It was dark. It was totally cheerless. We were shooting in the dark. It was, and anyway, I roll in, and I was wrestling after work every day. I had to go to wrestling practice. Mm-hmm. So it's just like one of those really intense things. I walk in, and he's in the elevator, and I look at him, and now he's Steve. I could tell he's Steve. And I'm like, how's it going, man? And we rarely didn't talk to each other. We were working. We rarely worked together, but this day we were. It's like, how's it going, man? He's like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And I was like, buddy, you and me both, I do not know whether I'm coming or going on this thing. And that was a real moment that we had. And I know we were feeling that because Bennett's a tough director.
Well, what do you mean by that? Explain why he's a tough director.
Okay. So, you know, he purposely, so we all have our thing that we do, you know, that we feel comfortable doing, you know, you come in and you kind of have an idea how you think it should go. And you kind of, you know, you kind of have your comfort zone. You think you feel, you know, your character. And inevitably, Bennett would think that was the wrong way to go. Mm-hmm. And so you just, and then you spent the day just stripping all that back into being the most uncomfortable version of the scene that you could possibly imagine it being. And so, you know, he would just be like, no, I feel like it's too rote, or I see you acting, or, you know, I think it needs to be a little bit more, let's just keep doing it again and again and again, or raw, or
do you, as an actor, are you like, yo, I'm doing it the same fucking way, I don't, no matter what you're saying, or do you feel like it worked?
Yeah, I do, because eventually what happens is you just kind of, you break a little bit, mm-hmm. in that space of like not knowing what you're doing anymore, or there's a kind of vulnerability that works really well on film, mm-hmm. you know, and it's real because you're frustrated, and mm-hmm. you're sort of like, you know, trying to find your footing. And that's what he likes. He loves that kind of space, mm-hmm. especially for those people. And so, it was just, that could be disturbing.
Was it like, know? How many, like, is he like a person who make you do a lot of takes?
Sometimes you do a lot of takes. A lot of times you'll start with the scene one way, and then he'll throw you a line, or you'll start heading in a totally different direction. Mm-hmm. And it'll be, you know, he's like, he'll do a gesture. He's like, the scene is kind of like this. And I'll like, you just kind of gently touch my shoulder in this kind of reassuring way that it sort of tells you, or told me, kind of the nature of the way Dave was dealing with his brother. Mm-hmm. So a scene that seemed antagonistic to me, mm-hmm. seemed like it was two brothers fighting, was really a scene about one brother like kind of gently trying to support another brother, even though it seemed like it was being a little bit antagonistic.
I got you. That makes sense, especially with the way there was so much subtext in that movie, and so much like,
yeah.
it's just like, what's going on here between the three? Like, who's being what? And yeah. on my side, are you not on my
yeah.
side?
Is yeah, and they all had like, they were all super complex people, man. There was no like good guy. Right. And so you're as an actor, you want to play the good guy, you know? And then, and he's like, no, No, nobody's a good guy in life. We all have a little bit of fucked up in us, you know?
And what about David Fincher? You worked with him on Zodiac. He's the one that I hear like 67 takes, 87 takes. And it's like when you're literally across the street. Is that real with him?
Yeah, man. So my first day of working with him, we did 67 takes.
Are you serious? What kind of scene?
It was a walk and talk, and it's me and Jake. We come out of the courthouse, and it's towards the end of the movie. We started towards the end of the movie, so I was already like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. But we started towards the end of the movie. It was my first day, and we come out of the courthouse, and we have about a half a page scene where we're walking and talking. And there's maybe 60 extras all placed around us and behind us, moving this way and that. It's a crane shot on a long, long crane arm, which is, you know, the camera's on the end of a long, long stick, basically, for your viewers, for your listeners. and they're moving it back on a dolly. So it's this big, kind of elaborate moving shot. And I'm the actor, so I'm just thinking, oh, you know, it's about me and Jake and this scene, right. And we're talking, it's about us, you know, and we're doing it over and over and over. And now it's starting to wear on me, like, dude, he hates what I'm doing. That's what this is about. He doesn't know how to fix it, so he just keeps reshooting it, right? And we're up there, we're like, well, now we're about like take 40 or whatever.
Jesus Christ.
And I see him over there and he's not looking happy, right? And I'm like, God damn, what am I doing? And I like, that's it, Ruffalo. You're the wrong guy for this part. And, you know, Sean was the one that they should have got. You know, maybe he's available now. It's cool. They'll still pay you. But, you know,
you're ready to be fired.
They totally. I'm talking myself into being fired, like trying to make it okay for what's gonna happen. And I see Fincher, he's beelining for me now, and it's like, here it comes, Ruffalo. That's it. He's had it. You did your best. Try not to take it too hard.
Dude,
be a man.
Book you a
don't
flight.
Start
You'll be
crying.
Done. You'll be home in the morning. Everything.
Yeah,
will be fine.
Yeah. They'll get me on a flight. I'll be home. You may have had this conversation at some point as an actor. Most of us do. And he came right for me. He walked past me. He goes to a background artist a few feet behind me. He moved that dude. I'm telling you. He moved that dude 3 inches. There's 60 of them. Mm-hmm. And he started walking back and he pats me on the back as he's going, gives me a nice slap on the back, you know, and he passes me. And I think, oh, okay. Well, this motherfucker he's shooting the whole picture. Mm-hmm. I'm just 10% of the frame. Mm-hmm. You know, what he's going for is eternity, man. This guy is like, this guy's shooting 100% and he's a perfectionist and he's not going to stop until he gets it. Mm-hmm. And after I squared with that, I was okay.
And that's how it was the whole time shooting Zodiac?
That was how it was the whole time. I mean, sometimes it was 30 takes, sometimes it was 15, sometimes it was 17, sometimes it was 20. But at that point, I knew, okay. And that's, he was one of the first people to move to digital from film.
Oh, right.
And he had, so back then there was no erasing a take. You saved everything, you shot everything, you saved everything. He had a special button made that would delete a take. And literally we would be in take 25 and I'd hear him say, delete take 1 through 24.
Like none of that's good.
No,
like we're starting now.
And you know, that
it's like a
you
fucking
were
iPhone.
Kicking it on 17, like you knew that was a take, right? And you hear that, you're like,
Me at this point, like, you know, like I get more. Like when I was younger, I'd be like, oh, you're just here. Like, I don't know. But now, as you get more experience and you have more say, and you sort of understand the process more. Will you be like, if you worked with him now or a director like that now, we'd be like, yo, what the fuck do you want? Like, or you'll just keep going.
No, man, I just keep going. I sign on.
Right.
You know, I just see like this is their trip. This is how they do it. I'm going to try and accommodate it the best I can.
I got you.
I might get frustrated with it at times, but I just keep trying to let it go, you know?
What's your best Martin Scorsese story from Shutter Island?
So it's Martin Scorsese, man. And I'm like, you know, he's the guy that was the one that we all grew up watching. We all saw the great acting. We all wanted to work with. So I expected this really kind of like heavy, heady acting trip from him, mm-hmm. you know? And that's not his thing really. You know, he likes to work with the actors, but he doesn't get into all the psychological stuff,
right?
You know, which is what I was kind of hoping for, and I was, you know, trying to impress him by telling him all the character work I was doing at this part, and he just wanted to run away from me, basically. Right. But one day he came up to me, and this is to exemplify his directing as far as the acting was going. He came up, he's like, "Yeah, I don't know, the scenes." You know, it works well on the page. It's for some reason, it's just, I don't know. Maybe it needs to, I don't know. He's snapping his fingers. Maybe it needs to, and I said, go faster. He's like, yeah, let's try that. And that was probably the most notary I got from him on that movie, you know? And I was like, that's okay. I could do that. I know how to do that. That's something I definitely know how to do. But, you know, he's a genius and he's a master, and when you see him at work and you see what he does with the camera, it's all storytelling as far as cinema goes. That dude is like the master of cinema. And so he hires people who knows their shit clearly, and he doesn't get down into the muck. He's like focused on telling that story cinematically, and you do your job and he'll do his job, and you'll end up okay, you know?
All right. Tell me the actor or acting experiences where you've been across from somebody, you're doing a scene from somebody where you were just like, fuck, this person's good. Like, you can name a couple of people like where you were just like, whoa, this motherfucker, where you're just kind of like, you're taken by their talent.
Well, Joaquin Phoenix is like still, I think he's one of the greatest actors of our generation, you know, and we haven't even seen what that kid's going to do, but you know, I was doing a Reservation Road with him, which was kind of, you know, like a small indie movie. Mm-hmm. And there's a mano scene, and, you know, his character, basically, I killed his son in a car accident, mm-hmm. in a hit and run, you know, and he does a vigilante, he tracks me down. And the final scene of the movie, first of all, we only bump into each other like once or twice during the whole movie. Finally, we bump into each other and he knows what I'd done. And he kidnaps me, puts me in the back of his car. And he scared the shit out of me. And we had a scene where he drags me out. He's going to kill me. You know, it's a big emotional moment for both of us. And man, it was like a blur to me, the scene. And it became the improvisation that was just, I mean, it's one of those perfect moments. And it just was so lived into and felt so real and crazy and out of control, and still was telling the story, you know, wasn't being self-indulgent. Mm-hmm. And still, like, I felt totally comfortable in his presence, you know.
He's good.
And, oh, man, he's so damn good. Tilda Swinton, I just worked with.
What's
who
she
was
like?
Amazing. She's she is freaking unbelievably good. And present and playful and sweet and funny. I had a little bit with Cate Blanchett, another amazing actress.
Now, these are like, you know, foreign actresses. They're, you know, supposedly well-trained. Is Cate Blanchett cool?
So cool.
She's like Oscar winner every fucking year. She's Oscar this. She's knighted.
So,
she's like a prince,
humble.
A princess.
Yeah, so humble, so cool. The best ones are humble and cool. That's been my experience. The ones who are just like, I think that are just real and the best, and just, they're not really movie stars, but they are movie stars. They're like super actors, but they happen to be movie stars. They're not movie stars first. They're always the coolest.
And give me one more person where you were working with, either even you just like fanning out, like, I mean, like, I not fanning out, because when you're there working with them, you're working with them. But like me, I got the chance to work with De Niro twice, and I'm in the shit. I'm working with him, but you know, in between takes, I'm like looking, and I'm like, there's the mole, like there his face, like the no, like you know, like was who was the experience like when you were younger that you were like
Redford?
Oh,
Redford.
Shit.
Yeah, man, I did a movie with Redford. It was like it was like my third movie. It was like a big movie.
Yep, Last Castle, right?
Last Castle, yeah. And there I was. I'm doing like full on 4 or 5 page scenes with Redford, mano a mano, like full on, like him and I going at it at each other, you know. And I was pissing my pants,
right?
You know how it is when you're across from these people that you know they're the icons, they're your heroes, you know?
Right?
And I was like, how am I gonna act with this guy? How am I? I'm quaking my boots. I'm like, how am I even gonna remember my lines?
Right?
Like, you know, you're like, am I gonna blow this? I'm gonna mess this up. And that dude was so chill and cool and invited me, you know, to hang out between setups and really put me at ease. But you know, there he is. There's the mole.
Right.
There's the smile.
Right.
There's the blue eyes.
Right.
The bluest eyes. You know, there's the all-American, like, seriously socially minded dope cat, you know?
That's fucking cool. All right, my last question, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate this. The people are going to love it. The fans are going to love this. And I love that you're sharing all this shit.
Oh, no, man. Actor to actor. This is fun.
I know it's interchangeable. Okay, so it's interchangeable. Don't feel any allegiance. Today, your top 5 movies of all time. I know it's hard. It's only 5, but just for today. Don't feel guilty about leaving anybody out.
Oh, man. Shit. On the Waterfront.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, of course, the Godfather 1. Brando, I'm a big Brando fan.
Yep.
Last Tango in Paris, I think is amazing. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
And you're in that shit.
Yeah, I'm in that one. And I have a small part in it, but I just think that's a really beautiful movie.
That's fucking cool.
That's cool. And I get to say I was in that one.
Right.
So that's 3. You know what I just saw that I just think is an amazing movie, which is a French movie, was The Prophet.
Oh, okay. I heard this was good.
That was really good, man. I'd put that up there.
It's that good, huh?
Oh, man, it's so good. I mean, it's messy. It's like it's definitely like has the indie spirit to it. And then one more, huh?
One more, just one more.
Oh, man, there's a – what's the great American – I mean, I guess Scarface.
Okay. Okay, that's a good one. I mean, it's interchangeable.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask me another time and give me a couple minutes, I know I'd have another slew of them.
All right. Well, listen, yo, Mark, I appreciate you you coming on the podcast.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you too, man. I appreciate your voice out in the world. I appreciate your acting. You're a badass, man. I admire you.
Well, we got to keep going, and you know, and keep speaking out, and you know, and keep pushing and keep doing our thing, and you keep doing your thing, man.
I'll be there with you, man.
All right, we're getting in on the Black Friday sales, okay? But you could do it safe. In sound, all butter soft I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast t-shirts. You could get it from the safe haven of your own home. You don't want to be out there wheeling and dealing and knuckling up, okay? But you could get butter soft I Am Rappaport podcast t-shirts at store.barstoolsports.com. Okay, we have the You Fuck You t-shirt, the world famous Suck a Shit t-shirt, the Gringo Man Dingo tee. All right, the Cat Killer t-shirt, and Christmas time is coming. So we have a beautiful, beautifully ugly fantastic Cat Killer sweater t-shirt coming, the Christmas edition. All that and more at store.barstoolsports.com. Black Friday sale. All right. Yo, I really want to thank my man Mark Ruffalo for coming on the podcast. You know, it's funny. We've only met each other in person one time, me and Ruffalo. But we got a lot of people in common. And, you know, we didn't talk a lot about politics, but he's outspoken on the front lines about everything he believes in, protesting Trump, protest. I mean, he's really out there. And you know, it's crazy because he has a lot at stake.
Yeah.
You know, and he, you know, he doesn't back down. He speaks out on pro-life, pro-choice, Trump, all, I mean, the environment. He's actually one of the first people, you know, as in the last 20 years, who's been really outspoken on social media about this stuff. So, Mark Ruffalo, that was a dope interview, man. So,
you mentioned Trump. I want to give Trump a shout out for getting them boys home. He didn't have to do that. That's not in his job description as the president, but he got them home. So you got to give this cat some credit.
You talking about LiAngelo Ball and the UCLA basketball players?
Yeah, and those guys that was doing some stealing.
He says he had something to do with it.
Yeah,
says he has something to do with it. I take what he says at like a crazy guy on the corner who's drinking that moonshine.
Yo, they let him out immediately after that. They just, you get 10 years for stealing out there, yo.
So, I'm just saying.
No, give the man credit. Everybody, give this dude credit.
My guy LeVar Ball disputes that Trump had anything to do with it.
Oh, you believe P.T. Barnum? Come on, man.
I'm just saying okay. And the thing about Trump getting him out, he goes on Twitter while the kids are still on the fucking plane from China. They're still on the plane from China, and he's on Twitter asking for them to apologize. I'm asking for them to say thank you.
Yeah.
These are 19-year-old kids. They probably had the shit scared out of them. They're still on the plane. He's like, you should say thank you. And then when they said thank you, and then LeVar Ball came back and, you know, said what I just said, basically saying, like, he didn't have anything to do with it, or he didn't have as much to do with it as he's saying, la, 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 la. Trump tweets again, I should have left them in jail. But what he wanted to say was, I should have left their black asses in jail.
Hey, economy's doing well.
Economy's been doing well. That ain't from him.
Two terms for Mr. Trump, but they will attribute it. It will be attributed to Mr. Trump.
No. Just like the economy was doing well in Obama, they didn't attribute shit to Obama.
Well, what's the one fucking factor?
He won't be two terms. There's no way he'll make it.
All right.
There's no way he will make it. Him and his crew are dropping like flies.
You got to admire a guy. Yeah, you may not like the politics and all that, but you got to admire a guy who's standing right there taking all the shots and still being himself and telling it like it is.
He's tweeting about Marshawn Lynch. This guy's a fucking joke. He tweeted about Marshawn Lynch not standing for the anthem. And he's like, you know what this all is? You know that Trump tried to buy the Buffalo Bills, I think, in 2014?
Yeah.
And the NFL wouldn't let him? He got a hard on for the Buffalo for the NFL.
Right. So he got him over a barrel now.
Yeah, he don't have him over a barrel. No one cares. And he's talking about the ratings aren't good. The ratings are great in the NFL. They're great. This guy will say anything to try to, you know, prove his point. He doesn't care. He's moral-less.
Right.
You know who else is moral-less? And this is going to be a great segue into the sick fuck of the week.
Yeah. This award is earned, not given. It's called the sick fuck of the week. This guy's really sick. Lock him up.
How could you do it?
Don't let him out.
Damn. You fucked the dog?
You what?
You fucked the dog? Why would you fuck the dog?
Why would you fuck your girlfriend's dog?
the sick fuck of the week. It's earned.
Earned.
Not given. You did.
What?
No.
No.
No. No!
Yes, this is Sick Fuck of the Week segment. It is an award that is earned, not given. It is an award that is earned, not given. Wes Goodman.
Oh.
Wes Goodman, who is the Republican state legislator for Ohio.
Conservative, Christian values.
Right-wing legislator, pushed family values.
Trump guy.
One of the most frontline guys, anti-gay.
Yep.
Was reportedly witnessed having sex with a man inside his office.
Couldn't wait.
Who was not employed by the legislator.
Damn.
Shame, embarrassment. I don't care if you're gay or not, but if you are on the front lines of being anti-gay, anti-LGBTQ, good for you. Yes. I wonder, was he taking or receiving? I don't care. This is sweet, sweet irony, sweet justice that this happened. Yeah.
Yes, yes. It's an indicator of this is when guys like this run campaigns on how they are anti-gay and this and that without any type of, you know, provoking from the gay community, just attacking them, then that's indicative of what we just, what you just spoke about.
I mean, what is your problem? This is a part of your political agenda?
So now you might as well come out and embrace that community that you lambasted. Embrace it because you're engaging in it. So
You know what? I don't know much, but I will say this. The LGBTQ community are some of the most compassionate people because they've all been ostracized. They've all dealt with severe shame, embarrassment, humiliation, injustices.
Yeah.
And prejudices. I guarantee you they would embrace this fucking sick fuck.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to embrace him more than the Iron Rapport Stereo podcast is. Look, Duke, we're not embracing you. The LGBT community, they will embrace you because they're compassionate people. We're just calling you a sick fuck.
Word. Accept your truth. Go with your man. Divorce your wife. Go with your man that you was wearing out in the office.
Go to Thailand. And get it popping, man. Get your Vogue on. Do your thing. Divorce your wife.
Yeah.
You know, let her be free. Let her live a life with a man who understands who he is. You obviously didn't understand you was. And come out of the closet. There's plenty of people in the LGBTQ community that will embrace you with love and open arms, sincerely, and totally understand the shame that you had.
Right.
And forgive you for being such a fuck.
Yeah.
Again, I just have to say, we're not going to forgive you over here.
And there's a caveat to the story. He they found he was fucking with at least 40 men.
He of course.
Snapchatting, picks up his pipe. Yo, what kind of guy is this? Yo, come out and run on a LGBTQ ABC. Run on that shit now.
Exactly. You might get elected in 20 years if you come to terms with who you are. You make amends for all the shit that you've said and all the lying and fairy tales you pushed out there in the world. Make the world a better place.
Yeah.
That's your opportunity. Make the world a better place because you've been living a lie. You fuck you.
Yeah, you shame your whole family. You shame that gay community. You part of them. What the fuck is you doing?
Yeah, you leave these people alone.
Word.
Another sick fuck, conservative state senator, Ralph Shorty. Ralph Shorty. Now, if you've never heard the term, it's an old school term called short eyes. Look up the term short eyes. It's a term they use in prison for child molesters. This child molester, Ralph Shorty, and there's nothing funny about this. There's nothing funny about Ralph Shorty being an actual short eyes, conservative state senator who once wanted to be a missionary, was accused, pleaded guilty. And this guy is a Trump campaign coordinator.
Oh, man. He set everything up.
Sex trafficking of a minor carries a minimum sentence of 10 years in prison. But Shorty could be sent to life in prison for the offense. The hearing goes down 2018. This is a true sick fuck.
Damn. With kids.
Engaging in child prostitution. Transporting a minor for prostitution. Engaging in prostitution within 1,000 feet of a church. You sick fuck.
Oh,
you.
Man. Why a trial? See, this shit. You put this shit in the paper. I believe that. Yo, why even a trial?
You don't deserve a trial.
Kids? Okay, I mean, just this guy is in that administration now?
Oh, no, he's in fucking jail. He probably already got that Wonder Bread bag treatment. He's going to get that Wonder Bread bag and olive oil treatment for the rest of his life.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Damn, these guys are sick out here, man.
Oh, this is a real sick fuck. Yes. Another sick fuck. We got this from the Daily Mail. This is the sick fuck of the week manifesto. This man in China had a padlock stuck in his bladder after inserting it in his penis. I have to stop. Is this a sick fuck or a dumb fuck? He's sick. Why you put a little padlock in your little fortune cookie, my man?
Yeah. He trying to get his shit more, trying to get a little more harder. Yo.
This guy's sick.
Yeah, man.
And he's dumb.
They need to. I wish it would have got cut off. I wish the doctors would have said, oh, we can't save this. That's what you get.
Finally, a Colombian teacher, another sick fuck, threatened to fail her students. This is a 40-year-old woman. Very attractive. She threatened to fail her students, the young boys in her, if they did not have sex with her.
Woo.
Now she's facing 40 years in jail.
Damn.
This is a nut job, too.
And these cats were 17, 16. Man, damn.
This is a sicko. But she like forcing him to do it.
Yeah. Yo, what's going on?
I don't know why it's a common theme, G. Listen, you need to work on the Wonder Bread bag and olive oil theme song. Because this is like a common thing.
Yeah. We've been doing it for years with this shit. All right, so we're gonna make some good music for that.
I don't know what else. It's the holiday season coming up. I could tell you we have some great podcasts coming up. We got Muggsy Bogues. We got Matt Barnes. We got Bradley Beal. We're not playing games.
Nah.
All right? We're not playing games. It's the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast, the worldwide phenomenon. I want to thank Mark Ruffalo again for joining the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. It was dope. It was some actor studio shit, but it wasn't the actor studio. It was the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. My name is Michael Rappaport, a.k.a. Michael Rappacrap. G. Moody, last name rhymes with duty. 2015-2016 podcast co-host of the year. What can I say? We're done. Have a healthy, happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy yourselves. We out.
Out.